Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I'm Judy Maples.
And today is April 5th, 2022.
Sorry,
and we're cruising into springtime. And this is very good. I had a nice walk around Fresh Pond today. I get a few of those in every week.
I've done that.
Actually, up on my Civic Journal website, I got nice pictures of turtles and a muskrat. Oh. You know, munching at the edge of the pond. You know, it's actually it's kind of great actually doing this regularly now. So, anyway, let's see. So, what's up in the world? I think first order of business
of which world, our local world or the big world?
Let's go with the local world here. The big world's
right,
a little too complicated
too
right now.
Yeah,
it is depressing, and I'm not saying I'm proud of this, but honestly, there are times I just have to turn off the television and say,
it's too much.
You know, it's that old Irish prayer about, you know, knowing the things you can change and can't change and the wisdom.
This is
the difference.
I mean, in our modern that we can see civilians slaughtered, it's just.
Yeah.
But I don't know what we can do. I wish we could have done something.
Right. I mean, sometimes I just have to put my mind elsewhere. You know, it's just that simple. Yeah. So, and speaking of elsewhere, you know, since those of us who do like to play or watch baseball games, just a reminder to everybody that the Red Sox and the Major League Baseball season starts this Thursday.
With our old foes, the Yankees.
That's right.
In the Bronx, not
in New York. That's right. That's right. So, but anyway, I'm always grateful that we actually have a season without cardboard fans. You know, it's funny
I know you're not into basketball, but the March Madness was fun to watch.
I heard it was great come from behind win for Kansas.
Well, they were basically destined to win. And I think if they hadn't lost a certain player at the very, anyway, I wish, you know, they were an eighth seed. It's very unusual to be in the
eighth seed.
So let's go on to local stuff.
All right. I don't want to say much about the COVID, but I just want to say one quick thing, which is that don't worry, folks. Everything's are sort of, you know, it's not disappearing. The wastewater numbers are going up. I'm not going to show you the graphs here, but they're going to look, but compared to where they were, they're a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction, even with the recent increase compared to the way it was in January. So I think we can ride this one out.
There's no increase in infections because New York.
We had a big jump today. We had 122 new ones today.
Yeah, but what's the percentage?
Well, I think the percentage positive is 1.94%.
Yeah, so that's higher than it was last
year. Higher than it was, but you know, we're not doing too bad. I think we just got to ride this one out, and you know, whether we'll get better. Hopefully, these BA2 variants, you know, it just plays itself out, and everybody's stays as vaccinated as you can be, and then we just ride it out. No new fatalities in a while. Knock wood.
Yeah.
You know, but
I don't think it's fatalities anymore. It's more
just
getting
serious illness
and getting over it. But which, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, enough said. You know, it's not gone, but it's, you know,
carry your mask whether you want to wear it or not.
Right. Though it is, it's kind of nice to be able to go. Like I had to pop into the water treatment plant at Fresh Pond today, and it's nice you don't have to like scramble around, stick on your mask, and
you didn't have to wear one there
because you
have to wear one in the library. I think
public buildings, you don't have to anymore.
Oh, you don't have to. Yeah. Actually, I just
as of March 28th. So, you know, I mean, you know, just protect yourself in whatever way you feel is best. So,
yeah,
it's really that's really what it comes down to.
Depends on where it is that I put it on.
Yeah, yeah. So, I just want to say a couple things about last night. It is last night's Cambridge City Council meeting. We've been having some nice short meetings, which is
the last two have been very short.
I'm very grateful for that, quite honestly.
Because you know why? Because the public comment is like maybe
that'll really drive it into craziness, to be sure. But you know, I will admit I have a hard time actually listening to it or watching it live because I get so irritated these days, you know, at some of the focus of things. So I often will just check out the video afterwards and then make my little summaries.
Well, depending on my time, I do that because I just tape it.
Yeah. There was one topic that came up. This is kind of a minor thing, I guess, in the great grand scheme of things, but it was a week or two ago, I guess a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, there was a story came out of Somerville about Somerville using some new kind of device for dealing with rat control. Rodent control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I've watched over the last 30 years, city councils, apparently they get a lot of their great, wonderful initiatives by reading newspapers, you know, so they say, well, Somerville's doing that. Well, how dare they? Don't you know, we are the latest, you know, earth shattering hit out Cambridge, right? So next thing you know, within a week, there was a city council order to look into getting these sort of rat zappers, or I don't know exactly what the technology
is. Well, wait, so it's not a poison? I thought it was.
No, I think it's they use a different form of capital punishment.
Yeah, but then what happens to the actual rat? What do you do?
It's actually go into the box, it goes, and then it's monitored. So then you have to go basically clear it out, whatever. But it also apparently has a really good track record. So far,
they reported on that.
They zapped, you know, dozens and dozens of rats. But
it was like 30 out of 50. Something they put out 50 boxes, right? But it's a pilot program there too,
right? One of the things that has concerned a lot of people, including me, with the when they put out rodent bait, is that I don't understand why a righteous squirrel or rabbit wouldn't eat the same thing that the rat would if it could get to it, and that you might actually end up with other animals that you don't want to kill.
Okay, but wait a minute, Robert.
Or a bird coming in and eating the poisoned rat.
It's more likely that it would be a rabbit or a four-footed thing. But I have to tell you, I was speaking to someone who's pretty sustainable and pretty eco and all that, and she didn't care if a squirrel or a rabbit could still eat her garden. So
no, one of my neighbors,
because they're all rodents, you know.
I know. So. One of our counselors kept referring to them as our bunnies last night. So apparently, I have a neighbor who has a rather sizable garden and grows vegetables who would just love to zap the rabbits too.
Exactly. So I guess it depends, but I mean, it's well taken. It's just, can you explain something to me? So the black boxes that I see now around, especially around where I live, they just have bait that then they bring back to their nest and then they die.
You go in there and
the black box releases some.
The bait is typically has like a hole drilled through the bait block. You put it over a little spindle, so the rat's got to be in there to eat it, but it doesn't die immediately. It's a process of that.
Wait, are we talking about the new mechanism or the one that's
out now? Just the ones that you typically see.
That's so what this I'm one saying. Here. So right.
This will be more like the old, remember the old roach motel? You know,
yes, exactly.
Roaches go in, but they don't come out.
Okay. So they actually catch them inside. Right. Okay.
And so you just monitor it, but apparently this is sort of smart technology. So it probably sends a signal saying, got one, or something like that. So, you know, as long as you've got some people whose job is to sort of monitor them, you know, then you can kind of do it. The good news was that according to the Somerville information, these particular devices did kill nothing but
only
rats.
Right.
So I think, to me, that's actually pretty impressive because I didn't know how well you could target something like that. You know,
but what about the thing, no one brought this up and I've heard using something that would stop them even
like birth control
reproducing
they've tried doing that's a technique that's used for controlling other populations as well, you know.
Why don't they put that in the boxes that they have?
They could do that as well, but I think this one here is, I mean, that's good for controlling future growth of rodent population.
Well, I think they need to do both, I guess is what I'm
saying. Yeah, well, maybe they will, you know, but I thought it was promising, and I just want to let anybody working for the city know that I would gladly volunteer my house in my neighborhood to host one of those boxes.
Okay, but let's bring up a good point, because John Nardone brought this up, which is, I think he's great at talking about these things. He said, basically, when you look at the whole overall problem, a lot of it is people behavior. It's not
that's right.
just the rats. It's
no, I mean,
people put out their trash. They don't pay attention to their. I mean, he didn't say all that.
Yeah,
we know.
No, it's, you know, and it's just, it's a cause of serious conflict. I mean, I don't want to go beat up on the property owner next door to me, for example, right now, but you know, the fact is they're terrible at managing their rubbish, and they never instruct their tenants. The tenants are as bad as the property.
And that is a problem all over the country, the city. That is an issue.
My yard actually is ringed with like hardware cloth to like control rodents' ability to get in and out of the yard. I mean, we really go on. You know, but I still chased one yesterday, you know, they got in there.
If you have the proper trash receptacle, if you always check to make sure there's no cracks, top or bottom, put out trash and, you know, you don't put out food. The big issue is when you have food in your trash,
it's and going harborage. To harborage rats. Is really the biggest thing. Is
explain that, because that was brought up around the gardens.
I think in almost any neighborhood where you see rats, if you don't have to look too hard, and you'll find burrows in the front yards or along the foundations of buildings. Yes. Or behind some lattice work or under a porch or whatever.
Tunnels, right? They're
going and so there. So you know, it's not hard to note that there are some places where the infestation is there. And so you can live in that neighborhood and you can be great. But then if the person next door is terrible, you've got the problem. So it's like an all hands on deck kind of.
But when you said harborage, how do you... What is that?
Just basically, rats aren't just looking for food. They're also looking for places to sleep and places to make babies.
Oh, so they're not.
Yeah.
So that's what thing about overgrown gardens or backyards means and, thought they like to go underground, though, but I didn't know.
Okay. Well, they can go underground, but they could also go in the base of a garbage can. And actually, the one thing we had, the issues come up for me because I was the compost guy for so long.
Right.
Was that people would say there are rats in the compost. I say, if there are rats in the compost, it's not really because they're looking for high quality food there. It's because at the base of some compost bins, if it's a compost operation that's not used very much, so it's basically undisturbed because it's essentially abandoned. Rats may find, or mice may find their way into there and then basically make a nest.
Set up a nest. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay,
Rarely did I run into compost bins that were active food sources. It was much more so that they were basically nesting in the base of compost bins or trash containers or whatever.
Also, backyard composters, you weren't supposed to put any kind of protein or meat stuff. The rats really prefer that over... you know, veggies and stuff like that. They still will go for food sources.
I think it's also
I think that's
you
true.
Put all the if you put meats in there, you also create fly infestations.
Well, it's a bad thing all around. Especially. Why they should use, if you have access to curbside compost, or even if you don't, there's plenty of places around the city. You separate your food waste.
Yeah.
It really,
I mean, what I always told people was you don't have to lose your mind because a little bit of this gets into compost, as long as you bury it in, you know. On the other hand, I've seen terrible situations where people had open compost piles where they'd eat lobster and they just throw the lobster shells on top. Nothing was dug in, nothing.
They're living like a suburban person because you know, people that have lots of land,
You can do that if you're out on a farm somewhere.
Exactly.
You know, but it doesn't work in urban, and it's not even legal in urban settings. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And though not specifically related, really not related at all, there was also a communication came back from the, I guess it was from the Conservation Commission folks and Public Works and Public Health Department
about
community gardens. It was is actually specifically in response to a city council order from last September that had to do with, I think it was, can we use ARPA money, coronavirus relief money, in order to promote above ground planters where people could actually grow food.
Raised gardens, yeah.
Raised gardens. Now, and I think the answer
raised
is...
Raised beds.
Yeah. The answer is, yeah, that kind of fits under the definition. You can do that. And I think that there was even a legal opinion from the city solicitor in this
you need
regard.
To use funds for that. You could always do that, but whether you
that's
use
right.
these funds
yeah,
for that.
Okay. To use some of those funds for yeah. doing that, you know. And I thought that's great, you know, and I
yeah.
think...
Sure.
You know, sure, do it. But one of the things that I sometimes find I have a little bit of a problem with amongst activists and city councilors alike is a sort of a lack of a sense of proportionality. And by that, I mean, if you have a problem because people are going hungry, don't think that by providing the capacity to grow some food in a few planter beds here and there, that you're really addressing the problem in anything other than an incredibly small way. Right. I mean, most of the issues about hunger really still come down to food, access to food that you can get through the more, traditional urban type.
Well, yes and no. There have been a lot of really great efforts in Dorchester and Roxbury on community garden stuff that has really helped the community. So,
oh, no, they help the communities. Saying, and it's also a great outlet. I mean, you know, most of the people I know who are involved in community gardens, it's as much as it is a mental health thing. I mean, you know, it's good for your soul to be out there working in gardening.
No, but I think it's important, though, for communities or people to see fresh vegetables.
I see to see it fresh, but in terms of actually getting food on the table and addressing hunger problems, I think that you got to scale it up by, you know, quite
right,
a factor.
But no one's saying it's going to solve world hunger. Did anyone
I don't see that. But you know, when the city council order went in there, it seemed to address like the notion that urban farming and raised planter beds was somehow going to really make a dent in a hunger problem. And I think in a limited way, yes. And it's a good idea, yes. But ultimately, the bigger question is just access to food through other means as well.
The bigger problem is we have access to food. It's in terms of, you know, people's schedules, their jobs, their ability to pay for things. I mean, right. I agree with you, but the one thing I had about that, and I don't remember her opinion, was because I think Zondervan said, well, why he wants people to be able to sell the food to other people. Because some people donate it, and that's already going on. I mean, Heather Hoffman has that garden on her property.
You know,
but
this,
that to me is a different issue, and I don't think
was,
you can use ARPA funds to then make an entrepreneur.
I don't suppose so. But one of the councils actually did seem to
well,
be bringing
but she
up.
She didn't say it couldn't. She didn't cancel it out.
Well, there were a couple of issues that seemed to come up by one of the councilors last night. Having to do with, it was almost historical at this point, it had to do with beekeeping and urban agriculture. Oh. There were actually initiatives with both of those names not too many years ago, which all seemed to stall and have kind of fallen off the radar, along with the outdoor lighting ordinance.
Raising chickens and pigs and bees. Yeah.
You know, and you know, part of it is we seem to sort of have a forgetful nature, I think, from a civic political point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, there was so much thing about, so much attention paid to outdoor lighting regulation a few years ago. And then the one person in community development department moved to Delaware, and then the issue vanished. And I thought, well, that's not how things should work. I mean, if there was some merit to the idea, there should have at least been some continuity. If beekeeping and urban, you know, farming, or if you want to keep chicken.
I thought there is an ordinance on urban. No, there is an ordinance on urban agriculture.
I think they might have actually done some sort of limited thing here. But I think what came up last night was that notion, well, if you grew stuff and you wanted to sell it, is that legal and whatever?
Right.
You know, my personal feeling is it's sort of like there ought to be like a limit, you know, and if you're operating under the limit, you know, because it's small scale, you ought to be able to sell anything, you know, if you want to just,
But I need to say something here because I work a lot, with the Gleaners and Food for Free. You can't, it's one thing to donate food. And even there, the Gleaners donation they're very careful about the hygiene, everything. If you're to the average person, isn't going to have those processes or vetting that, and you can't just. I don't know. I think selling it is different than donating it. So I think it's an issue.
I agree with it's an issue, but I think there ought to be at least a sort of simplified process for allowing small scale stuff too.
There's got to be, they're going to have to address it if that's where
right.
it's going. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like we're producing bathtub gin and selling it out on Broadway, right? So,
the point about the soil is brought up, which is very important about, that raised beds theoretically wouldn't have the lead in the soil, but there needs to be testing. All that stuff. So I'm just saying.
But we could so easily have a protocol.
Personal consumption, I think, is fine.
Right. Yeah. We could so easily have a simplified protocol with licensing and public health, where basically if your soil's been tested and you just got a little document that says we're tested, we're good, there ought to be at least some flexibility. You know, for some of these things.
Okay, but again, it goes back to, so do we fund that through ARPA, the ARPA funds, or do we just something we should be doing ongoing?
Right, but years ago when I was first learning to drive, I used to love to drive along Route 27, kind of running north and south through Sudbury, because every few blocks, it seemed, or every half a mile, there was either a farm, but there were also like yard sales everywhere, right? Yeah. Now, when people have yard sales, you know, that's commerce. Shouldn't you like get a peddler's permit every time somebody wanted to, sell?
But again,
sell
some... all right, we're talking, I'm sorry, but Robert, we're talking about food. We're talking about things that people ingest
versus
just selling.
Right.
And you're right, we have to have some laws about it. Yes, people should be able to sell things. But I think, the farmer market, how about the vendors at the farm? They pay to be there, okay?
Yeah.
And they're also... So I'm just saying, I really like the idea of people either letting someone else use their front yard to raise vegetables for themselves. I think everybody should get that opportunity. The selling of it is different.
No, I agree.
That has to be
and actually, that kind of relates to another point that I'd make. And I kind of wrote up a few paragraphs about this yesterday. Uh-huh. Which had to do with community gardens, just generally. Never mind, even if you're just producing it for your own sake, right? Doing community gardens, once upon a time, most, I wouldn't say all, but almost all community gardens were actually on private property, and they were sort of done just because somebody said, sure, go right ahead. Martha Edison used to do Field of Dreams down close to where Mahoney's used to be, long gone now.
There's people who do there's lots of
over in Cambridgeport. Yeah. I think Bill Cavallini used to be one of the mainstays there's a little community garden at a corner place. I think it's privately held.
Old Simplex site
it's just a private law house lot. Was also a at Broadway and Boardman Streets, not too far from where I live, used to be this really nice community garden there as well. But it was all done because the ownership of the Squirrel Brand factory said, sure, go right ahead. It was a place, there used to be a building on that plot, and they just...
So what are you saying? Are these separate from the community gardens?
Well, that's the point, is that in fact most of the community gardens were not in any way related to the Conservation Commission or anything else. There were some that may have been because, for example, there was one or two, there was one up by Neville Manor, there was another one along Fresh Pond Parkway on the grounds of the water department.
Yeah, I've seen all those.
Okay, so there were a few that were under city authority ultimately. Sure. But most of them were not. And
private property. It wasn't city property.
Now what happened at some point, some of the gardeners started saying things like, well, we would, rather than hauling water from our homes in buckets,
I get you.
Could we get a water hookup? And the city said, yeah, we can do that. But then we want to have some authority. And then from that point on, they started to have more and more authority.
But that sort of makes sense if you're using a city resource.
It makes some sense. But I have to say that what also happened, and it especially accelerated around the time when they were converting, really destroying the Broadway and Boardman Community Garden, which used to be much bigger. And they basically, when they were turning the the factory into some housing.
Yes.
They wanted to provide parking. That's another issue, right, for the housing.
We'll go into that in the next.
Right. And there was and there was also one person who worked at the community development department who had a, had an attitude problem about that particular garden dating back for when she was a kid. And so they wanted to take away some of the garden to create a park that nobody uses there that's just on the corner. So they did. And they took away a lot of garden plots as a result. Right. That's the thing is at this point here, it was the city took over the property and the city started making the rules. And they've kind of that process has continued so that now if you have community gardens, you know, and you have a gardener who's been there for a while, the city now wants to enforce a or has at times wanted to enforce a rigid policy. It says after a certain number of years, you gotta leave. And I, you know, my feeling about that, and
for all members, not just
all of them. And I have spoken about this for 20 plus years, saying that is a foolish and offensive policy. I understand that if you have somebody who's basically hoarding the garden plots and not allowing new people to use them, that's a real problem.
Yeah.
But it's always been a good thing to have some long-term gardeners as in the mix. So that a much better policy was simply to say, okay, if you want to have city support for the garden, then you have to have a certain percentage of turnover every year. But that doesn't mean every single gardener has to be ousted. I mean,
but
for example,
should there be a term, no term limits then? No.
I think we should really be up to the garden coordinators to decide how to do this turnover. Sure. If they want to be really rigid and just say everybody's got up to X number of years and then you got to leave, they could do that, I suppose. But I think that it would still be a wiser choice to simply make sure that a certain percentage turned over.
But what about people? What's the control over people that don't pay attention to their plot? Do they just get kicked out?
I mean, that's why garden coordinators should be coordinating that stuff. In most of the gardens, if it's basically abandoned, then the gardeners take it back. Yeah.
Okay. So everyone knows who everyone is.
But you know, you have to give a little bit of ownership to the gardeners and the garden coordinators, you know? And when you have a bureaucracy coming down, and I'm not getting down on conservation, which I think they're wonderful, but I think they really do have to think very carefully about these kinds of policies to not do the wrong thing. Anyway, we're just about out of time. So we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay.